Okay, let's do this. This is Jesse famous yet?
Hello?
Hey, Jesse. It's Brett. You famous yet?
Nope.
All right, thanks, man. Talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Here's another thing that is not going to be famous anytime soon.
Because you're ugly and retarded.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 93.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
Hail to the king, baby.
I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
I'm so not a raper!
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear hole. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this week in episode 93. I am super excited to tell you that Brett Hamill himself will be joining me shortly here in Dining Room Studios, no less. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this because this guy is super funny, and I think he is going places. He's definitely going places. I've seen him do some stand-up comedy here in Seattle quite a few times now, and it always just totally cracks me up. So, if you ever are in Seattle and you see Brett Hamill's name on some flyer for some night he is doing stand-up, you should definitely go and check it out because it is not to be missed. But yeah, he'll be joining us shortly here. First. We've got a couple things to talk about. We've got a fantastic iTunes review to read for you guys from, let's see, Mr. JD of the Stack of Dimes podcast was nice enough to leave us a little iTunes review, and we'll read that for you. Also, we've got some great news. Oh, boy, am I excited to tell you about this stuff. We'll get to that in a bit. But first, I'd like to talk about something that I did on Facebook recently. And just give you a little bit of backstory. I have been racking my brain to come up with good tweets and good Facebook posts. Because, you know, I feel like I can always do better at that, right? And so I'm just trying to come up with the funniest stuff I can. And you know... try to get some new Twitter followers, because that's how you do it, right? I was talking to somebody a while ago about you know, I sulking in that I have no Twitter followers, and she was like, well, you just got to keep on doing it, man. Just keep at it. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to come up with funny stuff to put on there. Anyway, let's see. The kiddo and Mairead and I, we went out to a nice little early dinner yesterday at a waterfront place that, you know, is pretty notable here in Seattle, I guess. They've got a number of different places. I'm not going to say the name. But we went down there, and it was a beautiful evening. The sunset was awesome, and we wanted to sit out on the deck just to have some drinks and enjoy some sunshine, you know, as a family, right? But we ended up just ordering food, and when it got to us, it was straight up disgusting. It was just bad, right? I had a steak and some prawns, came with some potatoes that were like, you could tell that they were like sautéed. The potatoes were sautéed, but they had been sitting there for a long time, so they were super hard. Like the outside was like super hard and stale, which, okay, that's number one gross thing, right? And then the steak, I ordered it medium rare, and it was well done and cold and chewy. So that's like, you know, that's pretty bad. And then, well, that was about it. But that's pretty bad, right? That's pretty bad. And that was like a $30 plate. That was a $30 plate, and it was crap. It was total crap. And anyway, I posted on my Facebook page, my personal one, that... something along the lines of the restaurant that we went to was basically the Applebee's of seafood restaurants here in Seattle. And got a little bit of a response back from it. Some people were kind of angry with me, I think, about posting that. Some people had worked there in the past, and they were kind of sticking up for it. And some people just really liked the restaurant, and we're sticking up for it as well. So I don't know. It made me realize that I do that with myself. Like, in my day job, some people, have some things to say about the place that I work. Not good things all the time. And I get a little defensive about it. I do. I find myself sticking up for the city that I work for. And, because it's not all bad, right? And that's kind of the same thing as this restaurant, probably. I mean, maybe it was just an off day. Although, I will say that we've been to this restaurant before, same location, many times. And every time we eat dinner there, and we said this on the ride home yesterday, every time we eat dinner there, we always say we're never coming back. Because it's just terrible. So I don't know. Maybe some of the other locations are a little bit better. But yeah, I finally kind of realized this. This dawned on me yesterday. I don't know why it took so long to get through my thick skull. But we tend to stick up for things that places of our that we work for, and so on and so forth. And why do we do that? Why do we feel a sense of pride? Why do we feel a sense of pride for these places that we work for? And I mean, I complain about my job quite a bit. I know that probably somebody that would work at this restaurant would kind of complain about it. But you do. You often have a sense of pride for the place that you work. You don't want people bad mouthing it and stuff like that. So I get it. I totally get it. I do. So it made me think back, it's like, and so this is my, basically what I'm doing here. This is my public apology for if I ever make fun of a place of employment of yours, one of the listeners, or, some friends that listen to the show. If I ever make fun of something like that, don't take it personally. Don't take it personally. Please do not. And I, in turn, will try not to take it personally when I get, emails that tell me that I need to work on things. I will not take that personally. This is my solemn promise, right? Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, that just got me thinking yesterday. Just got me thinking about that kind of stuff. I don't know. Let's go to this iTunes review. Shall we? Let's see. This one is from, JD of the Stack of Dimes podcast. He gave us a nice little 5-star review recently. This podcast is better than a pair of fancy silk underwear. I think that's in reference to one of their sound drops that they use quite a bit. It says air-dot-raid/net-podcast/dot-net is totally crushing it. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks for making fun of our hyphenated podcast website, jerk. Anyway, please go to iTunes like JD did and leave us a nice little review and a star rating, because it does really help us out in the long run, like I say all the time. We really enjoy reading these things, and we will always share them on the fake airwaves. That's always a good thing. Let's see. Also, big news, people. And I'm really, really excited to tell you all about this. I know that I've been keeping it a secret for quite some time here. It's been a couple months, but we can finally say that we are now a part of the Cairo family. Cairo being a radio station here in Seattle that does a lot of good things. Let's see, they've got TBTL, the podcast Too Beautiful to Live with Luke Burbank, and Sean DeTore's podcast, The Mixtape, up there, amongst other things. Also joining a new arrival to that family is the MacGuffin podcast. Based here in Seattle as well. So Yeah, we're super excited about this new opportunity to join their ranks there over there at Cairo. And you can find the all new, let's see, website for all these Cairo shows, including the ones that they have actually on the terrestrial radio waves at cairoradio.com. And that's spelled K-I-R-O radio.com. So go and check that out. We're up there. And it should be, let's see, the shows should automatically update on that feed. So you can basically just stream the shows directly from that website. It's kind of like a Stitcher almost, which is another fantastic thing for your smartphones and computers. But yeah, being a part of Cairo is going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to open some doors for us. And definitely maybe pull in some more listeners. So let's see. Fingers crossed, right? Fingers crossed. I hope this works out for us. Anyway, so go check that out, cairoradio.com. The website is still kind of being worked on, so it's in its beta version, but it's totally public, so you guys can check it out. And let us know what you think, because we'd love to hear that feedback too. And you can email me, aaron@air-ray.net. Also, wow, this is other big news, because it's been 2 years in the making. We've got some major overhauls to our website at air-ray.net, which I would love for you guys to go and check out. We've got all new pages that are being set up right now, including pictures, pages where you can see the actual pictures. You don't have to just go to our Facebook page anymore. And we're working on getting all the photos up there and stuff. Also, there's going to be some merchandise that we will be selling in the future. And you'll be able to find it there as well. So, and a new archives page, which works much better than our old archives. And it's easily... Now you can easily, find shows that you want to check out. So go over to air-raid.net, check that out, and let me know what you think on that. We're also going to be doing this thing. I know there's a lot of news here, a lot of just pluggy BS that I'm just spitting at you, but this is the last thing, and then we're going to get to some music, okay? I promise. Last thing here. We want to do this cool thing. A suggestion was brought to us, for like holidays and special events, we can put little pictures up in the background at the website on the kind of the title screen there. We can put little pictures and clip art and stuff in that kind of cartoony header. So if you have an idea for our 100th episode, which is coming up, 7 episodes away now, if you've got an idea, or you want to draw something up that will be up on the website and may possibly become a T-shirt, we would urge you to do that. So if you are a gifted artist or just a, mediocre artist and you want to draw something up, please do that, because we want to put that stuff up on the website. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited about this idea as well. So I hope you guys are too. So think about that. Put that in your pocket and let us know. Let us know. Once again, aaron@air-raid.net. Email me, guys. Love to hear from you. Okay. We are going to feature, this fantastic band, Red Fang, throughout the episode. I know we've done this before, these guys. I love this band. This song is off their album Murder the Mountains. It's called Hank is Dead. And when we get back, we'll be talking with comedian Brett Hamill from here in Seattle about his life, what got him into comedy. All right, this is Hank is Dead off Murder the Mountains by Red Fang. We'll be right back.
Baby.
All right, welcome back. That was Hank Is Dead by Red Fang. They are out of Portland, Oregon. And you can find this song on their fantastic album called Murder the Mountains. Well, joining me now in Dining Room Studios, very special guest and an all-around good dude is Mr. Brett Hamill.
Hey.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going all right.
Thank you for joining me here in the Greenwood neighborhood, which you apparently you hate Greenwood.
I'm okay with Greenwood.
Like our little chat before we started.
My little grittiness.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I feel safer in the prostitution awareness zone.
You mentioned that before, and I didn't know what that was.
What is the prostitution awareness zone? It's like the prostitution abatement zone or something. There's little signs on Aurora that say, "Hey,
I thought they
creepos,
took...
be aware."
Okay.
Oh, maybe they took them down. Maybe it's a
Because I know that there's one. When I first moved, I moved into Crown Hill. When I first moved into Seattle, and I was at the AM/PM up on 105th and Aurora. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
there's a sign right there.
Yeah.
At the AM/PM that says you're basically being watched.
You're being watched.
Yeah, Johns.
If anyone with a skirt higher than like 8 inches above their knees gets into your car, that's probable cause right there.
You're being arrested. Yeah. Yeah, or with fishnets. And that's what happened to me. I was filling up my car with gas, and a woman in fishnets came over and asked me how I was doing. I was unfamiliar with this tactic.
Fishnets, that seems a little hacky. You know?
It was. Well, she was a little bit heavier.
She's kind of a hack prostitute.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said earlier, this is kind of the area where prostitutes come to die.
Chewing gum? Was she blowing bubbles?
She was just a walking, like, prostitute cliche.
Come on. Step up your game. Show us something new.
Bright pink tube top on. Yeah. Her name was Julia. Last name Roberts.
Ooh.
Ooh. Pulling one out of the closet. There. Yeah. Totally. No, but yeah, I got asked if I would like to go on a quote unquote date while I was filling my car up with gasoline. So I thought that was a little weird. That was ballsy.
Did you?
Well, duh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's before I was married.
Just want to make sure.
God, man.
We're dealing with here.
Like I said, I've thrown your name out there a couple times, especially on the terrestrial radio when you do shows around Seattle.
Much
because,
appreciated.
Yeah, no problem, man. I think you're very, very funny. You're a very funny person.
Aww.
You're not showing it right now, but when you're up on a stage,
you want me to bring the thunder? Is that?
Yeah, Brett, tell us some jokes. No.
I will walk out of here right now.
Do you get that? Do you get that from people? Is that a thing?
Well, comics often bitch about this, that, you know, people are always like, you know, well, you're funny, huh? Tell me your funniest joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And usually when they ask that, it's so irritating that I tell them the most, like, terrible, like, dark street joke I know at the time.
Like what?
Like, I never give them my own material, but like I always tell like a very terrible, like something that will either like just completely offend them or just shut them down. There's the one about the one about where the lady's giving birth and the baby comes out, and then the doctor just takes the baby and like drop kicks it up against the wall, and the baby hits the wall with a splat and slides down. And the wife is like, "Oh my God, what are you doing?" And the doctor's like, "No, it's cool. He was dead already." Something dark, you know, something that'll just make him leave me alone.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That was awkward.
Yeah, see, that's how it's done. That's you just want to shut him down. Like, don't even like my wife to tell people on like airplanes or whatever that you're a comedian. Like, I just keep it
because you know that will come up.
Because what's that like?
Like, or, they expect it, you
and,
to be funny.
Yeah, and people will ask things like, "Well, how much do you make doing that?" It's like, what
kind of a question is that?
Yeah, exactly. It's very rude. But there's a lot of, you know, I am aware that that profession has a lot of cachet. People are like, "Oh, really? What's that like?" People know nothing about it because most, you know, I don't know, a lot of the artsy people I hang around with have probably never been to like a comedy show in a casino or something.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like a whole other world to them.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is it? Was it like, first off, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been doing the comedy thing?
About 5 years, almost 6 years now.
Okay. And you recently just are started doing it full time.
Full time, right?
Yep. So that, now you're hosting shows around the greater Seattle area.
Yeah, I'm
and doing things like that.
I'm doing, you know, casino. I'm middling. I'm featuring mostly, and sometimes I headline on the road around here. And now that I don't have my day job, my sort of range has gotten a little wider. So Idaho, Montana,
really?
Oregon, yeah.
Wow.
And then that's you gradually, cool. You know, you work out farther and farther. You get to, you know, the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you start putting together runs that get longer and longer and slightly more lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just kind of getting started with that.
Yeah.
So I'm able to travel now. And
well, nice. That's cool, man.
It's
and it's going good so far.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it seems like you're pretty busy. I see your name all the time.
Yeah, I keep my name out there. You know, mm-hmm. It's really all about self-promotion. I just want you to see it's name recognition.
Right.
You know, it's a lot.
Well, when I mean that there's just bumper stickers that say Brett Hamill that are just...
I put those there.
Postered all over Capitol Hill.
With like a question mark.
Yeah.
You know,
Who is Brett Hamill?
I should... Yeah, that's my street team, actually. I get a street team.
You know what? I just thought of a great advertising campaign for you would be on those... those billboards that say Jesus is, and just put Brett Hamill.
Just have like a large wheat paste thing that I can just slap on there.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. You don't see a lot of those.
Or just a picture of your face.
Yeah. I grow my hair out a little.
On the blank line there. Oh, that's fantastic. You owe me money.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'll give you 10 points on the back end there.
There you go. There you go. So you've been doing this for like 5 or 6 years, you said. Yeah. And what's it all about, man? What got you started in it?
I started, I used to be in a band. And,
really? What'd you play?
I played tenor saxophone.
Really?
We were this weird, like,
Were you in a jam band?
No. Thank God. No, that's not. I wasn't good enough, actually.
I was in one once.
I couldn't play, you know, the blues well enough to do that. No, we were more like the cocktail party answer is we were kind of like Morphine meets Helmet.
Oh, I love Morphine.
So like there were like melodic saxophone parts and mm-hmm. like really mm-hmm. percussive. It was three guys. So the guitar player played through like a bass channel and a high end channel.
Very nice.
I thought it was a cool, unique sound, but I just didn't have the dedication to, you know, excel at the saxophone.
Right, right.
And then other things happened in the band.
Had you been playing a saxophone for like a long time, or did you just pick it up for this band?
No, I played since I was like 12.
Really?
I took lessons, and I used to, you know, play in the marching band and the jazz band in school and stuff. But I never got that good.
It's a lot of fodder for being a comedian right there.
Yeah, just being a total dork, you know, wearing like, you know, decades old polyester with like
right. The
rubber booties that you stretch over the outside of your shoes. It was that kind of thing.
Very nice.
But yeah, I just didn't have the discipline
mm-hmm.
to get better. It wasn't like I was practicing my scales and stuff all the time. I just practiced when the band practiced. So I didn't have a lot of skin in the game.
And where was this band located? That was here in Seattle.
Yeah. We played a few gigs out, you know, and then we split up, but I found through the band that I was enjoying like the banter between songs more than the actual music. So that's kind of how I got into, you know, talking into a microphone.
Really?
And then, so there was that end of it. And then I've also done cartoons and comics since I was like really young. So I knew how to write a joke or how to set up uh-huh. something comedic. So those two things kind of came together at a point where, you know, I had broken up with my girlfriend. I was living in a bachelor pad. I had plenty of free time to just sort of dick around and, you know, started hitting the open mics. And, you know, about a year or two in, I was starting to pick up some paid gigs
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
just kind of went from there. And now it's like almost all I do, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you're good at it. I've seen you quite a few shows now. Cause doing the working with People's Republic of Comedy, mm-hmm. bringing comics in here to do this show, and then you know, I get a little kickback on the back end.
Oh yeah,
is that how they say it?
Yeah,
the kickback on the back end.
You get points.
I think points.
That's what makes you sound like you're.
Yeah, right. They let me in for free. Let's just put it that way.
Shh, you're not supposed to be telling shows. People that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's payola. Come on. Right? There's got to be some ethical considerations here.
Yeah, yeah. But you do a good job, and you get, like, people are into it. You know, you've got some funny stuff. Did it take long for you to come up with material that you felt comfortable with?
Like, yeah, I mean, like, it has taken years to write more about, like, my life. I mean, uh-huh. Everyone loves a good, you know, one-liner or word joke.
What did you call that? You told me at the Kindler show that I saw you at up at Laughs. You called it, like, blue comedy or something like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Blue. No, blue is more like dirty, which I definitely
dick
have some
jokes
of that.
And stuff like
dick
that.
Jokes
yeah.
and stuff.
Okay.
But it, you know, and I don't, I feel, to be honest, I don't feel like my act is where it will eventually be, you know, you have to, when you're starting out in comedy, you have to get laughs, right?
Right, right.
So like if you
it's an evolving
laughs,
thing, right? You're yeah. adding your constant, so do you constantly add in like more personal stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm always like, I never do the same exact, you know, feature set. You know, feature set would be like 30 minutes. I never do the same set twice. I try to shuffle in newer stuff or at least throw in a couple new tags that I've thought of.
Yeah.
So it's constantly developing. But, you know, I feel like, I mean, any comic could examine their act and say, I don't think I'm there where I want to be yet. You know, that's kind of what keeps you. But my act has definitely gotten more personal in the past, especially since getting married, you know, marrying a Jewish woman, you know, for the jokes. That helps.
You're like Seinfeld's dentist.
Yeah, I'm like the living embodiment of Seinfeld's dentist. But I get a pass that way, you know. Like, I turned down like a fairly lucrative gig to be at Passover, you know, so I feel like that entitles me. Like, just that entitles me to be able to make these Jewish jokes. I actually had to turn down work for a high holiday.
Right. How many times do you have to do that for people to feel comfortable with it?
Some
Maybe
of them never will.
Twice
you know?
A year.
Some of them will never accept me. but, you know, I cleaned up that brisket, you know, broiling pan after Passover. I think I paid. And also the Jews like the Jewish material more than, you know, anyone else probably.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
Like when I've had all my Jewish friends come to shows, like they
appreciate
they dig
it.
That. Yeah, they like to get. But so I told her, like, babe, I had to turn down this, like, you know, fairly lucrative weekend for Passover. And
right,
she's like,
right.
Really? And she's like, what did it pay? And I told her what it paid. And she's like, oh, well, you should have taken the gig. So I was like, well, let's establish, you know, a baseline of pay.
Well, see, Brett, it's all about communication, my friend.
Yeah, no,
see,
I'm learning
you've,
that.
You've
I'm
been,
learning
you've
that.
Been married for a year now, right?
Correct.
Congratulations,
Thank
by the
you.
Way. Much belated congratulations. But yeah, it's all about communication, man. Right when that thing comes up.
Well, I just assumed, I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to ask her if I can take this gig. Mm-hmm. It's on Passover. She'll kill me. She will, you know, shred my face off. And it, you know, turns out I was wrong. So
is religion still a pretty big part of her life?
No, we're pretty, I mean, our household is a pretty, culturally Jewish.
Yeah.
She has like a hardcore of, you know, Jewish friends.
Yeah.
So we celebrate Passover is the big one.
Right.
You know,
right.
We don't really do much for Hanukkah. You know, we don't do much for Christmas either. You know, I was raised Southern Baptist basically. So, we're not pushing in any particular direction on that one.
Right. Right. Know? And you grew up in Florida, right?
I grew up in Florida.
Yeah. What's that like?
It's a terrible place. nice to visit.
I keep on hearing that about Florida. I've only driven through it. And like, I was on a Greyhound bus from Miami to Roanoke, Virginia.
I can only imagine. Florida
and
is like
holy
the new
shit.
Florida is like what California was in the 60s, like the place that these horrible cultural monstrosities are born.
Yeah.
You know, like in the
60s,
you had like the Manson family and the ugly side of the hippie movement. Now, Florida is the place where like a guy gets brained with a baseball bat for an Xbox. You know, like that's where all the terrible, you know, the Trayvon Martin and all that stuff. That's where all the terrible
was that Florida.
Happened. Yeah, that was about 12 miles from where I grew up, actually. And I'm not the least bit surprised. I also grew up in the county that threw the 2000 election to Bush.
Right.
So that if that gives you which actually now it's a blue state. So go figure. But it's a weird, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs.
Well, it's probably only a blue state because all the conservatives don't go and vote, right?
That's the thing.
Isn't it pretty conservative?
Well,
down
the old
there?
People,
I mean, that's
the
still
old
considered
people vote,
the South.
You know, because they. I mean, it is. It is the Deep South. You know, in the right places. There's a lot of people that aren't from there, but there's still just this solid contingent of hardcore. You know, I grew up with dudes that like used to hunt for alligators with a drywall hammer. You know, just like
are you
savage.
Serious?
Yeah, just like guys that you know are too savage to make a reality show about.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like you can't pretty that up.
Yeah.
But. You know, I grew up in a like the largest at the time non-incorporated suburb in the country. Just this massive. It's called Deltona. Just this massive suburb with you know basically just houses and lawns.
Just cul-de-sacs.
And cul-de-sacs that yeah. make no rhyme or reason. You know.
Right.
And
right.
Then a couple strip malls thrown in for good measure.
Dude, we were flying. That reminds me of we were flying back from God. Where were we coming back from? I can't remember. Maybe it was Mexico. But I looked out the plane. Anyway, we were over Texas, and I looked out the plane window, and you could see all these squiggly lines down there. And I had to really like focus on what it was. Like I picked up my glasses, put my glasses on. It was all, and I took a picture of it. And it was all just this huge expanse of just cul-de-sacs.
Yeah. That's what happens when like developers
just
run
suburbia,
a state,
right?
Yeah, like the developers, yeah.
And they were totally empty. It was just the roads. There were no houses there.
They just lay out the roads in whatever way would require the least bit of earth moving to build a subdivision on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. You know, it's not laid out in any sort of grid system. Like you could literally get lost for days, you know, if you didn't know where you were going.
Right.
Just a terrible. I mean, that's what's terrible about Florida is just completely unrestrained growth. Developers ran everything.
Yeah.
You know, until a few years ago as the real estate market started tanking, then they realized maybe we shouldn't have let developers, you know.
Yeah,
decide everything for the past 50 years,
you
know,
so.
And wow. So now it's just a shithole. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrible place.
So you said you grew up Southern Baptist.
It was a denomination called Alliance.
Oh, okay,
but a lot of people don't know what that
was.
Is
it pretty hardcore?
Were your parents
pretty pretty steeped in religion?
Yeah, very. My father was a minister growing up.
Oh, really?
Which probably, you know. Might have led to me getting into stand-up as well. If someone heckles him, they're going to hell, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I don't have that luxury, but very, very religious, but like sort of casual, like evangelical religious. Like I've been watching Friday Night Lights a lot lately.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a very accurate representation of kind of like Southern suburbia, you know? People go to the big sort of big box churches with the video projections. So it's like a hip, it's like a more, you know, it's not hellfire and brimstone and people speaking in tongues, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still very culturally conservative.
Are your parents still pretty, is your dad still a minister?
Or? He's not a minister anymore, but, they're still religious, you know?
And what did they think of you becoming a stand-up comedian?
I think they think it's cool. I think my dad thinks it's cool.
Really?
You know, that I'm talking into a mic.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he did. I'm sure they might disagree with some of my material choices word choices.
Right, right.
But
have you ever done your, have they ever come and seen you do your bit?
No, they haven't. Bits? They haven't actually. Because they're down in Florida, in Atlanta.
Are you freaked out about that? Like that it might happen someday?
No, because I'm old enough now to where, like, hey, you got a problem with the way I'm making a living,
tough shit,
I'm a grown-ass man kind of thing. That's kind of the attitude I take. And they probably wouldn't. They're good people, you know. But they probably would take umbrage at some things.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah. It sounds like it.
Politically, we were pretty different. But, you know, that's part of being an adult is figuring out how to... how to navigate that, like, you know, we totally disagree on almost every substantive issue, but, you know, you're my folks, you know?
Yeah.
Put me through college. What am I going to do?
Totally.
You sent me to the college that, like, taught me all the things that made me realize that maybe the way you believe
you
is actually
was wrong.
Is wrong. it's kind of a bitter pill for
them,
I'm sure.
I was always really tentative about my parents coming to see me do a show. Like,
do they live around here?
Yeah. They live. I grew up in Washington over on the Kitsap Peninsula in a small town. So, and then I went to college over in Ellensburg at Central Washington University. Yeah. and was in bands throughout my time there and stuff. And my parents came and saw us once, saw us play once. And luckily it was a show where we actually had people show up. So that was a plus. So it wasn't just my parents sitting in the audience, you know,
a guest list with just your parents' names on it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it was so nerve wracking. It was so, and you know, it's different. And this is why I asked you why I got into the music thing with you too, because like I always thought that I would never ever be able to get up on a stage with just a microphone.
Yeah, well, it's that like, that's the
being
thing.
Being a musician, you have this piece of equipment that almost like guards your body.
It mediates between you and the crowd. Right, and also you right. have other guys that you can depend on, you know, if you screw up something, they're going to pick up the slack. Which so that is it is terrifying at first.
Yeah.
But then you also get to realize that you don't have to help the drummer haul all his shit in every time you have a gig. You just show up,
right?
You
right.
know, in a yeah. button-down shirt and jump on stage.
I think so, that's the same thing that Howard Kramer had to say about it too, because like he started out as a musician as well,
mm-hmm.
and then became a comedian. But yeah, that's interesting, especially yeah, because that's like the worst part of being in a band.
Well, I mean, from place to place. The best part about comedy is it's all on you. You don't have to depend on anyone else. Like, you know, you don't have to worry about personalities clashing.
Right.
You know, I definitely, in my opinion, comedy is one of the purest performance arts because it's just you, a microphone, and the crowd. I say that, like, rapping and comedy and stand-up comedy are two of the purest art forms because you just have to bring the thunder on your own.
Right.
There's no pedals or effects or bells and whistles. It's just you. You have to bring it.
Well, that's what makes it more freaky too, man. Don't you think?
Yeah, like scary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Definitely. But you know, if you do it long enough, you learn to fail, and then you get such a thick skin. Like, you know, most people when they first start getting into comedy, maybe you go to a couple open mics and see what people are doing, and like when and you. Like, see someone bombing on stage and you feel terrible. Like, it makes you feel, like, kind of awkward and weird.
Yeah.
But now when I see someone bombing on stage, it's the funniest fucking thing to me.
Really?
It's funnier than someone killing on stage to me because I you know, that like, terror in their eyes and, like,
right,
just their, their growing awareness is especially good when it's some, like, alpha male douche who thinks he's going to destroy.
Yeah.
And he gets up there and within 30 seconds the room is, like, silent. Like, to me, that is the funniest thing in comedy.
So how did you feel? How did you feel? And I don't want to, like, you know, point fingers at anybody or, you know, bring anybody out. But how did you feel then at the Andy Kindler show? Because that was not the crowd for Andy Kindler style comedy.
Yeah, and I could have told you that. I think we talked about it beforehand. I was like, you know, that's why whenever he comes to town, I try to get someone to do some press on it to get some people to come over the bridge. That's the crazy thing. And like last night, you know, I'm featuring at Laughs in Kirkland, which is kind of my home club. It's a great club, you know, but it's in the suburbs. People are maybe a little bit more conservative and a little less, they're not going to get your like cultural references.
Right. They're going to be more of like a Jim Gaffigan fan than they are a, for lack of a better example, Andy Kindler
yeah. or, you know, someone like that. Yeah. I mean, which they still can laugh, you know, you can still make them laugh, but they might not catch your like killer, like Fleet Foxes reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, Andy Kindler had this joke about, and he does Andy Kindler, if you don't know, does a bunch of like one liners. They're pretty much just all
he
real
does meta
short
comedy.
Meta comedy. Yeah. He had a joke about hyperbole, and I'll bet you that I and the two girls sitting next to me and then the three people that I was with were the only people that got that joke because we knew what hyperbole was.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I saw there's a few jokes that that just killed me and the back of the room is going wild and then the front and it's like but he's just a machine. He does what he does, you know.
He just
like
kept
he's,
on going and going.
He is him.
But
you know?
Could tell like I mean you I just watched his body language change throughout that show.
Sure. Well, once you figure it out, that, oh, wow, like, you know, this would be destroying in a room of smart people. And I don't mean to disparage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're
but
not
it
talking,
is the suburbs.
Just,
come on. I grew up there. I know from which I
speak. I did as well. You know? But we don't want to say, I mean, there's just different groups of people who find different things funny. Some, you know, some people would call Andy Kindler's comedy smart comedy. you know, because mm-hmm. you do have to, it's cerebral. You have to think about it.
Well, you
for
have
a second.
To understand the levels of irony involved.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, people would be like, why doesn't he just tell another joke? He keeps talking about the joke he just told. Like, yeah, that's
right,
why
right.
you should come to see him, because he does yeah. that better than anyone else. But you
exactly.
can't explain that to some like 50-year-old, you know, laid off Boeing employee or something. You know, he just wanted
right.
to go there, you know, do some jello shots.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like have some guy make fart noises and,
uh-huh.
you know.
Laughs Comedy Club has some fantastic, fantastic jello shots, I will say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
I'm not doing those anymore. I've had my fair share of those.
Well, hey, let's. I don't mean to cut you off, but we got to go to our second musical break here. We don't have to, really, because this is a podcast, but I just like putting it that way because it makes it sound more professional.
The illusion of time.
Behind the curtain. Yes. We're featuring music today by the fantastic Portland, Oregon band Red Fang. And
I like it.
This is another one off of their album Murder of the Mountains. This one's called Wires, and we will be back in just a moment with more from Brett Hamill. And second half of the show, this is where I start to get drunk. Here we go. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Like that now, like I can't drink good beer. It gives me heartburn.
Hmm.
Like I used to really be into microbrews, and now I can't do it.
I can drink a good beer and then follow it up with something watery and don't mess.
Yeah, like Coors Light.
I've become like that Southern guy that just drinks
right.
Bud Light, or in my case, like Henry Weinhardt's. You know.
Oh yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
My go-to
that's a good one.
Red Hook ESB. That's like my. That's my beer.
See, I don't even like that. I don't like the ESBs. I can't stand the pale ales.
Yeah,
I
would not
like American
want to drink
lager,
like six of these. Like I would drink one of these and then switch to something watery.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But I get made fun. I get made fun of for it all the time. It pisses me off. It's like I'm not
for not drinking.
For not drinking like something better. Like I'll go for like a my go to is Coors Light.
Yeah.
It's like toss me a silver
getting
bullet.
Old.
Shit.
Like,
get off my back.
I want something watery, you know,
that I
can like not feel too hungover from.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want to be able to drink 18 of these.
Yeah, like after three, I'm not tasting all the subtle like bouquet in this microbrew anymore.
Right.
I'm just like pounding water, you know, liquid into my mouth. So.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Come on. Jesus, people.
It's called being a grown-ass man.
Thank you.
Time to be
Thank
all fancy
you.
With beers.
Yeah. Well, welcome back, everybody. That was Wires. By Red Fang. And hey, we've got a couple shows that they are playing over across the pond for our listeners over in the United Kingdom and in the Netherlands. Tonight, April 15th, Joiners in Southampton. Southampton, United Kingdom.
It's probably pronounced like Southampton or something.
Southampton, yeah, maybe that's it.
Some weird anglicized.
They've got a bunch of dates. They're a European. They're on a European tour right now. The 16th, they're going to be in Manchester. And then for our listeners in the Netherlands, on the 19th at Doorn Rouge. I'm not even... Okay, just go
flawless
to their website.
Pronunciation, yeah, yeah. There.
Redfang.net. Go check out their tour dates because they'll be around. Anyway, welcome back, Brett Hamill.
Hey there.
Sir. Before we left for the break, we were talking a little bit about your growing up with religious roots. Mm-hmm. And then kind of getting into comedy and yeah. how that all came about. Yeah. So do you think your religion played a big part in that?
In comedy?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that people that were raised really religious actually sometimes have an edge because you have, mm-hmm. because the onus is on you to like, find your truth, you know. You either just like accept whatever is received through like the way you were brought up, or you try to find, you take that scary journey into like, maybe everything I have learned isn't true, maybe there's some mm-hmm. other truth. So I definitely think that it's conducive, you know, like Bill Hicks, for example, you know, very religious family, you know, and but he, you know, I think that that I think that that informed his comedy, you know, the fact that he knew his mom was going to disagree with some things he said. So he you know, if you, I think the stakes are higher, you know, when you know that like, this is some things that you believe now run counter to how you were brought up.
Uh-huh.
The onus is on you to like, be even more sure, that you're trying to get at the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes I look at it like, cause a lot of great comedians come from very religious backgrounds and like, they talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, in their acts and stuff like that. And like, I feel like they're the messenger, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're telling all of us atheists that grew up atheist what it's really like,
mm-hmm.
you know? So,
yeah, bravo. I mean, it does, you know, I don't do a lot of religion in my act. Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. eventually I will. That's probably an untapped like territory that I will get to eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think as you get older, as comics get older, they start asking the bigger questions. You know, I'm really trying to formulate the perfect dick joke or whatever. So, like, you know.
That just makes me laugh so much because I just picture, like, you sitting on a bench at Green Lake and you're just, like, you're staring at the water.
No, it's more like in A Beautiful Mind. Like, I have a shed with, like, you know, like, Time magazine articles plastered to the wall and, like, little strings running to them. And then and my wife, like, stumbles onto it one day and is, like, mortified and, you know.
Coming up with the perfect dick joke. That's fucking awesome. This is why you need to come and see Brett do his thing, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing, let's see. This is going to go up on Sunday.
I will.
You're not doing anything on the 15th, right?
I don't think so. I have some big dates. I'll be at Laughs at the end of next month. The last week of next month, I'll be opening for Hari Kondabolu.
Oh, really? He's coming back to town.
A local guy, yeah.
Nice.
I will be at
the
Humor Program on April 21st.
Where's that?
It's a pretty funny show.
Where's that at?
Oh,
the Humor Program.
It's at Hales Palladium or whatever.
Down in Fremont?
Yeah, it's in Fremont. Just Google Humor Program. It's a funny show. They have puppets. It's kind of interview style show.
Oh, weird.
Oh, I'll be at Egan's in Ballard on the 18th, which I'm really looking forward to. It's that jazz club right in Ballard,
okay.
Which is the perfect layout for a comedy club as well.
Yeah.
Just a really shallow, wide room.
We need a good... Okay. Before we get into like the other stuff that you do, I wanted to get into this really quick. What is the comedy scene in Seattle like? Because it feels like now that I've kind of like... edged my way into knowing a lot of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems very exciting right now. Are you guys excited about it? I mean, is it?
I'm not more or less excited than, I mean, Seattle, this is the answer you'll probably get from any working comic that's kind of risen through the ranks in Seattle, is that it's great because you can get stage time readily available. Like, mm-hmm. almost every night of the week, you can get up on a show.
Mm-hmm.
and you can fail in front of just, there's no industry there to be like, oh, that guy sucks. We'll never pay attention to what he does
right,
again.
Right.
You know, you can kind of develop in obscurity. Industry doesn't really come here.
You
which
can really,
is also,
you can really just kind of work on your craft.
Yeah. You can work on your craft in obscurity for years, you mm-hmm. know, until you get really good. And then you show up somewhere like LA and they're like, who the hell is this guy?
Right.
He like just arrived here fully formed, you know, they've never seen you before, but that's also the problem is there's no industry here. You know, Seattle used to be a place that like major festivals would have showcases, like the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival would come here looking for talent, and they don't now. If you want to showcase,
they don't do that anymore.
Not really. Now, if you want to showcase for like big things like that, you have to go to like the Bay Area maybe even Vancouver or of course LA.
Right.
Right. It's we're like kind of a second or third tier town in comedy.
Still.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, not that like the individual clubs don't get great acts in.
Right. Right.
But the scene as a whole. It's not like
because it just like coming into this from like an outsider's perspective and not really knowing much about it when I first did come into it, you know, or get involved, I should say, like it was eye opening and exciting for me because I was like, oh my God, this whole thing exists.
Yeah.
And it's like and it felt like it was like just ramping up, you know, because People's Republic of Comedy has been doing some pretty great
what they've
things,
been doing,
you know?
Yes, they've been bringing in like top headliners.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and good, you know, good
and
comics.
filling
yeah.
up Chop Suey. You know, twice.
I mean,
a month
it just comes in waves.
Yeah.
Like, now where I'm at, sort of in my career, quote unquote, is that like now I look at it as like, what are the paths to any sort of success mm-hmm. in Seattle?
Right,
and there really still isn't. I hate to say it. I mean, you have to go to L.A. or New York or something
right.
to like. Get seen and get, you know, asked to audition for like big festivals or whatever. But I mean, it's a great town. The people are smart, so you can do smart material. You know, it's got its strengths, but it's not like, I mean, I've had headliners tell me like no one got famous out of Seattle, you know, doing comedy out of Seattle. They moved somewhere.
Right.
So to me, that's kind of the benchmark I'm looking at now. I love what all the different shows people are putting on, and I'm happy to be a part of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know.
Well, do you think like podcasting has had a part to play in why these shows are so popular? Because a lot of these comedians now, like every comedian has a podcast. You have a podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Called Ham Radio, which is very, very good, and I urge everybody to go and check it out.
Please.
You know, it's kind of it feels like maybe the podcast. I mean, it's, you know, that like you said, this stuff goes in waves too. There was kind of a lull in the comedy in the national comedy scene for quite some time during kind of what the 90s, a little bit maybe early 2000s, and now it seems like it's up on the upswing again.
Certainly, yeah.
And there's a lot of places that you can get comedy now. It's all over the internet. You got your Funny or Die. You got all these podcasts that people do.
So, yeah, in that sense, I mean, yeah, in that sense, comedy is, it does feel, like, comedy goes through phases of feeling like this hacky, shticky thing that people do in corny, like, clubs, and then, you know, it feels like, then, at some points in culture, it feels like something vital that's breaking,
right?
You know,
right.
That's like, oh, maybe I should get into this, you know, and then when people do, like you were saying, then you realize there's just this whole vast, you know, ecosystem of things going on.
Yeah.
It's always continually, you know, rebirthing and people are quitting and new people are starting. There's always new people starting comedy. And like the fact that we've been in a recession has definitely, you know, added to the number of people signing up for open mics.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause people don't have much better to do or they're out of work or, you know, they decide to give this a shot.
Uh-huh.
So I would say, yeah, I mean, podcasts have definitely like, it's much easier podcasts and Twitter, and whatever social media make it much easier to like follow people's careers.
Right. Right.
Know?
Well, plus if you're somebody writing that material, you can kind of test it out too. Right. Is that part of it? Like, do you have a Twitter account?
Do you, like, Twitter's great for like writing
shit out
like,
on
one
there?
Liner. Yeah. I definitely use that as like a slush pile to write like one liners. I mean, you can't write anything much more in depth, but sometimes it's also a good springboard
for
premises and stuff. And it's also, you get that instant feedback. So like I've posted things before where like, we'll just throw this up. Seems kind of silly. And then it'll get, you know, retweeted 50 times and you're like, oh, actually, I guess that's a solid joke that people connect with.
Right, right.
And so there, Twitter has actually caused me to add jokes to my act that, you know, had no intention of using in my act previously.
What's your Twitter handle? I'm going to write that down.
Brett Hamill, just Brett Hamill.
That that's just normal, dude. I'm going to have something
for you. Yeah, I don't have any, like, you know, donkey biscuits or, you know, nothing like that. Just the name.
Yeah. So I mentioned that you have a podcast.
Yes. Ham Radio with Brett Hamill. Yeah. It's on iTunes.
Very good. It's more of a sketch comedy show. Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with the idea for this thing?
I knew I wanted to do a podcast. I didn't know what it was going to be. And there were already a few comedy podcasts in Seattle at the time that were like already kind of interviewing people that I would want to interview. So I was like, well, maybe I'll after episode one
like
or
who?
Two.
Who are these people?
Well, Delicious Mediocrity was one. It's a Douglas Gale, Derek Sheen, Mark Allender podcast, which they've now mothballed.
Yeah, I went on. I was like on one of the last episodes.
Oh, right on. Yeah, is that what did it? Is that what made him?
I think that's what made him go under. It's like, fuck.
Yeah,
this guy destroyed it.
Way to go. Yeah, just drop the mic. Did you just drop the mic at the end of the session?
Yeah. I was like, quit good now.
Night. Boom. Yeah. That was good. And
that was a fun show. That was a really fun show.
And then Mike Table for One with Mike Cummings was another one that they were both interviewing people that I would want to interview.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I'm going to take it in a completely different direction. So I decided to do the most like labor intensive one man sketch comedy podcast ever made.
Right.
It's mainly sketches. There's usually a couple bit longer form sketches and then a couple short like fake commercials or movie trailers. Sometimes there's like a through line. It's kind of like an improv show, like a Herald or something, but recorded over the course of a month. So it's not.
So
in
are
the
you
moment.
Doing it? You're just doing it once a month.
Then. It's a monthly, yeah.
Okay. Oops.
Which I pretty well stuck to. You know, I put it out once a month, and I also one of the benefits is it gives me a chance to write comedy that's not for the stage.
Right. Right.
So you can let that, you know, it's like working different muscle groups. You know, leave the stage. You know, leave the stage stuff aside for a while. Work on this. You come back to the stage stuff, and it kind of seems new again.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely use it as a way to sort of. Spur on writing in general.
Yeah.
And now I've also started to get guest voices on there too.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said before, you keep on mentioning this guy, Jesse Case.
Jesse's
very, very funny guy.
Funny dude.
Yeah. From Seattle, right?
No, from Nashville originally.
Oh, okay.
But he lived here for a few years.
Yeah.
And we became really good buds. He's like the best man at my wedding. And so we started a podcast that we never edited it or put it out.
Uh-huh.
That kind of is what started it. He showed me how to use some of the equipment, and then he left. So I was like, well, it's just me.
Yeah.
What do I want to do with this? You know. And so here I am. I'm on episode 18 now.
Yeah.
You know, when I see guys like you that have like 100 episodes out, I'm like, holy shit! Like how, you know, I'm amazed at the sheer volume. Like I feel like I'm just
well.
Like,
see. Whenever I look at my number of episodes, I still think of myself as being young compared to some of the other, like, you know, there's TBTL here in town. They've got, what, 1,000?
1,000 probably.
70
sure.
or something like that, you know? But they, you know, Luke does that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stack of Dimes, they're in their 200s, 250s or something like that, you know?
I mean, I feel like my podcast is a different metric because it's scripted and highly edited with music cues and sound effects and stuff. So
Well, we were talking during the last break too. It's like Radiolab, a show that we're both big fans of, is like released once a month.
Once a month,
And you can tell why because I mean, just doing one of these yourselves, like I don't think I could do more than one of these a week, unless this was my job, you know. There's no frickin' way. I already spend, you know, 35 hours a week on trying to get a guest, you know, lining up the music, liability
stuff.
And
then drinking.
And then drinking, making sure I have a bottle of bourbon for myself for each show, you know, so.
Yeah.
It takes a long time.
I look at it more like I'm writing like a I'm writing sketches. I look at it like it's going to be, you know, I don't have a huge listenership right now, but I have a respectable listenership. So I feel like I'm basically creating a record of all these sketches I've written.
Right.
It's going to be like, it's kind of a demo reel. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
It's like a demo reel for sketch writing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's super good, and it's a super novel idea too. So if you've heard the Dana Gould Hour, Brett has been doing this before Dana Gould started his podcast. Just keep that in mind, okay? Because kind of along the same lines, sketches and things like that. So
I would compare it. I mean, I think its closest like relatives that people would actually have heard of are the Paul F. Tompkins, the Pod F. Tompcast.
Is that how he does his too?
Well, he has like live sketches and then he intersperses. But just the fact that it's like sort of episodic and there's like sketches within a larger program. And also Super Ego. Those are both podcasts that I was like, oh, that's kind of what I'm doing.
Right.
But I was so thankful I had not heard them before I started my podcast.
Right.
To know like what could be done with it. I'm glad I just kind of just started blindly.
Because
it would have been really daunting to try to like top or match anything they're doing.
That's how I kind of started this one too. I was inspired by WTF to do something like this because I just thought that's the coolest thing in the world. Like what if you could do a show like that with musicians, you know, and get them to come and play in my living room because I'm super lazy and I don't want to go to their show. Like bring them to me, you know? So that's
Did
why
they actually
I started
play in
it.
Here. Or?
We've had a couple guests play live music, but then I just got even more lazy and I was like, it takes a long time to set that up.
Comics don't have equipment, man. They just show up, bring the thunder.
We'll just have comics come in and just do stand up for me in my living room.
That's called a hell gig.
Oh my god. Yeah, I can see why.
You give them drink
tickets.
They redeem to you. In PBR,
that's awesome.
Please.
Yeah. They'll even go and get your drink.
Like, actually, there's a couple hundred comics that would probably be happy to be a part of this.
But you also do, well, actually, one thing that I love about your show.
Just one.
All right. This is my favorite
part. Top five.
I like your show. The one thing, well, we don't have a lot of time. We're running out of time here. My favorite part about your show is the sketch where you do, you call up Jesse.
Oh, yes.
And you're like, are you famous yet? Or you leave him messages and stuff like that. It's hilarious. And then he calls you back and leaves a message on your voicemail or something.
That was my attempt to start having, like, as I've gone, I've accreted different layers of, like, recurring gags.
And
recurring sketches and recurring characters. And there's, like, now, like, if I don't have a bunch of new stuff, I can always revisit these things I've come up with before and kind of tweak them and do something different with them. So that was one that I thought would be fun just to keep him involved in it because he's done all the original music and stuff. And, you know, yeah, people like that. It's weird.
Well, remember when we first kind of got in touch with each other, I emailed you and I was like, dude, is that real? Was that real? Because you need to stop calling that guy.
You're really starting
to piss him off.
It's definitely building towards an explosive climax. Let's put it that way.
I can't wait to hear
There's definitely a story arc there. It's happening.
Yeah. Well, it's a super good show. I think you should be very, very proud of it.
Thank you.
You do one more thing. We got to get to this before we end things here.
Has it really been like...
We've been talking for an hour and 2 minutes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Goes quick.
Yeah.
Goes quick. So what's, you do this other thing, you write a column now for City Arts Magazine here in Seattle.
Yes.
Right? Tell us about that.
Doing some writing for them. Basically I'm just doing like a short column at the beginning of the magazine, each month. And I'm not even sure yet if it's going to be a regular thing, but it's I'm on my second one now, and I just pick something that just irritates the fuck out of me and just hammer it.
Like the last, the latest one that you did was about recumbent bicycles.
Yes.
Can you give us a synopsis of what you wrote in there?
Well, I just think they're the most hate-worthy people.
Yeah, they're
in
the
Seattle
dumbest
like,
fucking
just,
things
I,
ever.
I mean, and like. It's funny because I dated a woman whose brother
built them.
No, no. Oh, okay. She said she just mentioned in passing, like, oh yeah, my brother like hates recumbent bicyclists.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I thought about that for a second, and I was like, you know what? I fucking do too, man. Like, he inspired me to hate. I was like, yeah, that is a definitely hate-worthy thing. Like, just super deserving of scorn. I mean, I think what I hate about him is they just have this smug, you know, precious attitude about, like, they've figured out something that, you know, all the other bike riders, like, are, you know, aren't hip to it. But right, they figured out the ergonomic way to bicycle. But you look fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
My
question is, how do you go up a goddamn hill in one of those things? You don't, right?
Your balls splayed out to oncoming traffic. It just, it's, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't seem like you'd have the
torque or whatever.
The torque. Thank you. To go up a hill.
I don't understand. I mean, they look ridiculous. You know, the people usually in them are like, you know,
they're all
60-year-old guys.
They're all fat.
You know, with a little soul patch that think they've got it all figured out. Just gray-bearded, like, wankers, you know. I mean, the column is basically, first of all, I'm clearly choosing some pretty goofy things to hate on. But I feel like that's a little more lighthearted than if I was just like, you know, people of color. I don't know. that probably...
That wouldn't go over well. Probably.
You know, but
well,
just
maybe
things,
you might want to try it.
There are things, you know, like that guy, he's like creating more hate in his wake than you know, someone who's intentionally trying to piss people off. Or maybe he is intentionally. I don't know. So make sure you check out the next issue where I'll be talking about dudes who have waxed mustaches.
Oh, you know, I saw
the
one
novelty
today.
Facial hair.
I saw one walking around Green Lake today. It was like it was all curled up on the ends, and he had shaved his head, so he was like he had like the Mr. Burns from The Simpsons haircut. I was like, why even do that? And yesterday, I saw a hipster wearing a fez.
Yeah, I saw you posted that on Facebook. I mean, it's just
fuck that guy.
I mean,
why?
Usually, the objects of hatred are going to be like urban attention getters,
right? Right. Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are drawing attention to themselves. And you know what? Ultimately, I'm just trying to be funny. I don't really hate people.
Yeah, they're probably good people, but come on,
they're actually all terrible people. But no more terrible than you or I. But just the fact that
I'm pretty good. I'm a pretty good person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, make me feel bad.
See,
I'm
so good. I'm laughing at your terrible jokes.
I'm using I think anger is one of the like, you know, ways I build momentum.
Yeah.
In comedy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think if I can get angry about something,
worked up.
Yeah. If you can get worked up and you can be that guy, like you can make it funny.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the angle I'm usually working. You know, and there's so much of it to get angry about in Seattle.
Seattle is
just such a.
There definitely is.
Like some of the topics I've wanted to hate on in that column, like, are actually like already they're hackneyed. They're so like the guys in the, you know, full REI garb walking across Westlake. Like, really, would you just get back from Kilimanjaro or something? Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the hipsters, with the girls with like the back tattoos, where they have to wear a shirt that's like cut out so that you can see the entire
You
know, but those are almost hackneyed at this point. So my column is trying to find new people to hate.
I like it, man. I like it. I'm really excited about this.
I am too. I really.
Well, Brett Hamill, thank you so much for coming on the show, sir.
Thanks for
having
me.
This has been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah,
and
I can't believe it's been an hour. Are you sure you're not just trying to get me out of here?
Yeah, it's been 10.
Talks more about my childhood.
It's been
Come on.
10 minutes.
I got some shit to get off my chest here.
Well, we're going to have you back on because this has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to, you know, this total truth when I say this, I am I'm a very big fan.
Thanks,
very
man.
Big fan
big
of
fan
the
of
podcast.
The big fan of the Air Raid podcast.
Thank
Got
you.
Subscriber.
I noticed that you didn't mention it when you were saying, you know, you were listening to some podcasts.
I noticed that I didn't say that either,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't have time to circle back. So, and I also appreciate.
So now you're circling back now.
After you brought it up, yeah. So
okay.
It doesn't really count anymore. But yeah, huge fan, big fan.
This
long
is great.
Time, first time.
Wonderful. Well, okay. Well, where can we find all of your stuff? Pimp your wares.
Oh, you can go to bretthamill.com. that currently houses my podcast, but soon it'll have my expanded sort of comedian website.
Awesome.
Trying to get that together. Awesome. With links to my writing and city arts and other projects and my Twitter feed and all that. You know, look me up on Twitter. That's a good place. And check out the podcast. That's my ongoing thing.
Please do.
Podcast Brothers.
Yes.
For life.
Yes. You want to bump it?
Let's bump it.
Bump it. Boom. Done.
Nice.
Blow it up. Yeah. And you can remember, you can check us out at www.air-raid.net. You can also now find us on the all-new CairoRadio.com. Go check that out. Give us some love there.
Yeah.
Terrestrial
radio.
Now, once again, our numbers count, so shit. Anyway, and remember, you can hear me every Thursday on the new KVI, AM 570 at 1:30, 1:35 in the afternoon every Thursday. I'll be talking music shows and comedy shows, and I get all my news from Brett. So
from my Twitter feed.
Yeah, from his Twitter feed.
A lot of stuff about, you know, soul patches and...
Yeah, yeah. So make sure you tune into that. We are going to go out today with the song Prehistoric Dog. This is one of my favorite songs of all time. Please visit Red Fang at redfang.net. These guys are so good. All right. Prehistoric Dog. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
Thank you, me. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.